is Norman Barth.
And I'm the Executive Director of Lutheran World Relief. And this is a fourth and or third of a series on global issues. And I see my wife isn't here, and that's probably because she's heard me so often. She probably could give the lecture herself. Reminds me of a professor who was traveling across the United States giving the same lecture at universities and colleges as he went across the country. After 2 weeks, he's in Ohio, coming from New York to the West Coast, and his chauffeur said, you know, I've heard this lecture so often, I could probably give it myself. And the professor says, hey, you know, that's a good idea. I'm really bushed. We had that lecture late last night, and now we have this one this morning. Why don't you do it? And so the professor put on the hat of the chauffeur, and the chauffeurs got in the back seat and put on the professor's hat, and they drove up to this university, and they were met by the president, and indeed, after a very glowing introduction, the chauffeur gave the lecture. And because, you know, he may have missed a point or two, there were still 5 minutes left in the hour, and the president of the university said, Doctor, would you mind if you took a few questions? Absolutely not. I'd be happy to. So the first one was a student up in the balcony, and the student said, Doctor, he said, being an anthropologist, if you were digging down and you came across the bones of a dinosaur, what would be the strata you would expect to find beneath those bones? What period would it cover in the development of the world? And what would you expect to find immediately above? And what would you expect to be the carbon dating of those bones? And this chauffeur sat in and said, you know, Mr. President, I'm really surprised that at this august university, a student would ask such a simple question. It is so simple. In fact, I'm going to ask my chauffeur to answer. So my wife isn't here, and you'll have to take me. Well, I called this, you have room for one more. In Nairobi, in Kenya, they have little vans, Econo vans, we would call them, or something. And they're, in the slang of the street, they're called one more. Because no matter how many people are hanging on to that van, there's always room for one more. And believe me, it's unbelievable the number of people that get hanging on by one hand or on the roof of the car. Is there room for one more? And I think that historians in the distant future, if they are able to look back on the 20th century, they will undoubtedly look back and write about the population change that is occurring in the world today. We are witnessing a flood crest of population growth. Already in this century, population has increased threefold. From tens and hundreds and thousands and millions of increases in population, we are now witnessing a billion people in growth in 12 years. And what took decades, in fact, what took centuries, is now happening in 12 years. So between the 4 billionth and the 5 billionth person, only 12 years passed. And from the third to the fourth billion person, it took 14 years. And from the second to the third, it took 30 years. And from the first to the second, it took over 200 years. and it's increasing. Mexico, for example, and we'll talk about Mexico in greater depth, but interestingly enough, Mexico builds a new schoolroom every hour. Every hour. And yet, in that same hour, 252 people are born. Pretty crowded schoolroom, I'd say. What's permitted, do you think, this growth in population? Why has that been? Does anybody have any ideas in that? Why are we growing, you know, quicker now than ever before?
Yes. Well, population grows exponentially. It's a fact it's a scientific fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to always increase rapidly.
Who came up with that theory?
Oh, I don't recall.
Yeah. Well, who was it?
Paul Avery.
Thomas Malthus.
Yeah, Malthus. A pastor. And he discovered, you're right, that population growth is geometric. Goes 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 60, 64, 128, huh? Keeps doubling like that. I mean, it's whereas, interestingly enough, food production increases arithmetically. Another hand back here.
Some populations of people need to have children so that when they're older, they're taken care of.
Yeah. So they have more children, you suggest?
They have more children because most of them die, and because so they'll have some that will be left to take care of them when they're older.
Well, those are all, yes, Klaus.
I think basically the number of births have stayed the same in these countries, whereas the number of deaths has declined sharply because diseases were fought against. And so less people died, but about the same amount of people were born. And so the number of people living there increased.
That's right.
My doctor told us when we were having our children, you should have four children, two to replace you and your husband, and two to add to the population.
Yes, that was a good theory.
Marge? I was going to say the same as Klaus.
Yeah.
Better health care, people living longer.
Sure.
The
antibiotics.
Better natal care.
Yeah.
So that women had a much shorter lifespan than men at the end of the century. Yeah. Now they live longer.
That's right.
But still, how do you explain the third world? About how the death rate is so.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about three stages of population growth. But all these reasons are good ones, huh? Antibiotics, DDT, immunizations, huh? Improved transportation, which permits people to get to medical attention more quickly and more effectively. And all of these things, and yet there are three different population worlds. We live in one population world, the industrial world, where we enjoy high life expectancy, approaching 80 years now in the female gender, and we have low fertility rates, 2 children per couple, often less in many areas, and we'll see some charts. And then there's a second area, second population world, in which, and these are the poorer developing countries, where the economy is based on subsistence farming, where health conditions are poor, where life expectancy is between 40 and 50 years of age, where infant mortality, as was pointed out over here, where 1 in 5 children dies before the age of 1, where the woman averages 7 or more children. And then there is the developing countries, which have made genuine strides economically, agriculturally, and where national incomes are improving. And some countries get caught in what is known as a population trap, that as they improve life expectancy and as health improves, deaths decrease, but something happens too, and that is populations, the number of births keep going up. And you get caught with a population that is increasing both because of declining deaths and increasing births. And it, you get caught because your economy, your agriculture, can't sustain them. And then, when you're caught in that population trap, as Lester Brown says, then you can expect real problems. And Our Common Future has a whole chapter and more on population. And this is written, by the way, by both people from the North and from the South. Present rates of population growth cannot continue. They already compromise many governments' ability to provide education, health care, and food security for people, much less their ability to raise living standards. This gap between numbers and resources is all the more compelling because so much of the population growth is concentrated in low-income countries, ecologically disadvantaged regions, and poorer households. But nor are population growth rates the challenge solely of those nations with high rates of increase. And this is true. An additional person in the industrial country consumes far more than places far greater pressure on natural resources than an additional person in the third world. Consumption patterns and preferences are as important as numbers of consumers in the conservation of resources. And so it's known and accepted and recognized that a child born in the North will consume 5 times what a child born in the South will consume. And so the question has to be asked, is population a matter of numbers, or is it a matter of consumption? And so we go back to Malthus, an English pastor who wrote an essay on the principles of population, Thomas Malthus. And he focused on the relationship between food supplies and population. And because Malthus centered his attention on this rather narrow issue, not much research has been done on population. And the host of population-related issues. Well, I see my wife is here. Maybe I should turn the mic over to her. To mention a few, pollution, climate change, and I happen to be a believer that we are engaged, or we are experiencing a change in climate. For example, let me just say, how does population affect climate? Well, in New York City, and if some of you are from urban areas, and I know you are from Portland, Seattle, Spokane, and other places, Minneapolis, St. Paul, in New York, we get the weather report. It's going to read like this. It's going to be 65 degrees in New York this evening. It'll be 52 in the suburbs. Why? Well, lots of reasons. New York is built up, stops the wind, there are more people there. I don't know. It changes the climate. Or in Africa, where you don't have big concentrations all over the place, but as population increases, people have to find land to till and raise their goats and sheep and camels and all that kind of stuff. And they have to go to more marginal land. And that means they have to cut down more trees, and they create deserts, changing the climate. Deforestation, literacy, overgrazing, urbanization, water, and many more of these things, such as inflation, environmental issues, all are affected by population, and no one has really done a detailed search and study of these factors. And population increases geometrically, while food supply does not. Let's just take a look at this first chart. Whoops, maybe.
Oh, sorry.
Maybe I will. Bill tells me I'm known as the wanderer, and that's why they gave me this long thing, but I tell them that a moving object is more difficult to hit. Now here you have a graph, if it stays. It shows you what happens, for example, just with lamb. And the fact that as populations increase, there's less lamb available. And particularly, I want you to look at that bottom line, less developed countries. The reason that arable land is decreasing per capita is because of the high rate of population growth. You notice the industrial countries, and let's call those the northern countries, Western Europe, Japan, Australia, North America, the decline, while it's still taking place, is not as steep as in the less developed countries. Population, increase in population means there's less land per person to grow food. And you need, obviously, land to grow food. Take a look at here. Here is food production per capita in the world. And again, you got, these are the three underdeveloped areas. Latin America, Asia, look what's happening to sub-Saharan Africa. One of the highest population rates, causing, of course, per capita food production to drop, but also the ecological damage being done by population is evidence there. It's the only one of the three underdeveloped continents that is experiencing this problem. And you can see it's a very drastic problem.
Norm, in that picture though, it looks like Latin America is starting on a decline.
Yep.
Is that continuing? That's through 83.
Unfortunately, that's the last one I had. It isn't declining as much as it did, but it's still declining, but it's still above, the earlier averages.
Do you think one of the reasons Asia has improved is because of the rice that they're now able to raise for themselves?
That, plus a very, and we'll talk about it later, a very strict population or childbearing number of children you can have, huh?
I was thinking of India. Where are they now raising up rice to feed themselves?
Well, that's a possibility, of course.
Norman?
Yeah?
That doesn't show that much of the food in Latin America is for export. Yeah. It doesn't feed the population there.
Well, that's another, no, this is just strictly
how much they're growing
per capita, per person. And much of it, you're right, in Latin America is cash cropping, as we call it. Which does very little good for the person who's trying to live on the land.
Pardon, is that done by multinational corporations largely, or landowners that possess most of the land?
By both. The governments encourage it, you see,
yeah.
Because it means increased for
export.
Money export. Yeah. So you see that the number of people in the world or an area of the globe also often presses against the availability of food. And the 84-85 drought in Africa is a case in point. That as food production decreases, you're going to have, and drought increases, you're going to have increase number of people at risk of dying. population is being looked at as a factor now in why a nation fails to progress economically. Why per capita food production decreases and continues to decrease in sub-Saharan Africa. China today, as you know, restricts families to one child. What do you think about that kind of a policy? Anybody got any thoughts about that?
It's good.
It's a good idea.
No choice.
No.
Say again?
Not the way they're doing it, though.
No. What's wrong with that?
There is a lot of plain murder of babies. There are forced abortions up until the 7th, 8th month.
Yes.
It's detrimental to the females in that population because males are the only ones who are honored and valued, and so the number of male children is so much higher than male female children.
Are there any problems with that?
Yes.
What, for example?
It's misogyny. It's a hatred of women.
How about India?
Well, same thing India. It might be. I'm not sure I'd go that far. it's not a hatred of women, but something more.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it might be. You're right. But how about down, what happens when all these males become 21, 22?
Yeah, that's
right. There aren't going to be many partners for them. Huh? What's going to happen to the value of women? Are women going to have more than one husband?
They'll fight over
them. They'll maybe sell them because they're of economic value. No? I mean, the impacts, who was it? Roger, last name, he wrote a book, Forced Options. Philosopher, an ethicist from Union Theological Seminary. I want to say Roger Shield or something like that. He talks about options that we really don't have. They're forced on us by decisions we're making now, and 20 years from now, 40 years from now, all of a sudden we find out there aren't enough brides for everybody, huh? And so the options we are forced upon us may cause us to take action that we wouldn't necessarily like to take. So you're right. Parents are abandoning girl babies many different ways in order to have a boy. Because in the Chinese culture, a boy is of greater value than a girl. And yet China's achievement in reversing its birth rate may, according to some, be a hopeful sign in a world in which last August of 1987 saw the 5 millionth child, 5 billionth child born, and they say in Yugoslavia. Let's take a look at a birth rate in China, if I can find the right one.
Norm, is it working in India where they kill the little girls when they're born?
Well, India is another interesting case. We're going to talk about India. They went a different way. They went through a sterilization process. Here you see some countries' growth rates. And this is in relation to grain production. Grain production. Now look at here, 4.2 in Kenya, the world's highest. And I don't see China. I have another one with China on here. But look where all of these countries are. And they're all above 2, huh? And look what's happening in the rate of grain production per person. And as I've said in another class, if you do the rule of 72 and you divide that population growth rate into 72, you can tell how quickly the population will double. So 4 into 72 is around 17.5 years. It will double. 2 into, in Ethiopia's case, 2 into 72 is 36, so it'll double in 36 years. And you know then that you have problems when these countries already have difficulty, huh? Going back to China and the fact that it is, despite this drastic effort of limiting only one child to a family, there has to be at least some hope, because after all, China is a fifth of the world's population. They have over 1 billion people. And I think the second thing that we can take from that is that there are ways for a government, if it's committed to reducing fertility, there are ways for the government to do it. We would not agree with the method that China is, of course, following. That's not my point. The point is that this is too aggressive for our viewpoint, and yet its population of China, and I'll see if I can find a better one, is expected to increase by no more than 1%, in fact, 0.9%. India, someone brought up, with a population now of almost 900 million. And you saw that earlier map, and you saw that 54 or some percent of the people in the world live in Asia. And the two big countries are India and China. Here's one with China. Rising incomes. And you notice that the rising incomes are in areas where the population is the smallest. Right up here. And the declining incomes are in areas where the population is the greatest.
You mean population growth? You
growth, growth. Yeah, thanks, Glenn. Population growth. So that's part of the issue in population, is that people are going to be less well off if the population continues to grow. India's, for example, population is projected to be over 1.6 billion people by the year 2100, and over 1 billion people in just 11 years. If India's population growth, and it's a high one, I don't, there it is, 2.1, that's pretty big. By the middle of the next century, India's population will be over 3 billion. And so it's considering compulsory sterilization of all males who have 3 or more living children. A sign of hope, however, in this population problem is clearly evident in the north. Population projections by the mid that we once thought in 1970 have failed to materialize. We are not increasing as much as expected in the north, and I'm going to show you another slide where we can look at what's happening in the north. There are countries who have moved from a high population growth rate to a much lower growth rate. And this is 1986. And at that time, according to this figure, Klaus, you can see that there was a decrease in West Germany of 0.1%. All of these, of course, are in Western Europe or North America. But this too has important future ramifications. For example, what does it mean in terms of West Germany, let's take, meeting its NATO commitment to produce or to have so many soldiers in the NATO army? If you're declining population, you're going to have fewer men between, you know, 18 and 21 or whatever that is. I guess it can be said that in general terms that the developed world's population is increasing by less than 1%. Even the USSR, and I shouldn't say even, but the USSR, who's not depicted up there, has a population growth rate of 0.9%. The factor that the young people who are around today will have to face is what to do with those of us who are over 60 and 65 years of age. We will have fewer babies. The US will have fewer babies, and our own life expectancy increases. And I showed another group a slide, if I can find it here, on what our population looks like when charted on a graph. The top, the more developed countries, the check here is 1975, and the white line is 2000, male, female, and you notice that 75 plus, particularly among females, increases considerably, and it's almost a straight up and down kind of thing, which shows very little growth rate. You notice down here, it's just a sliver. The bottom chart shows you what the sex composition of the population in the developing world looks like. Again, 75, the year 2000. And when you realize that, look at this enormous potential here for even greater population, when you get young people, you know, over half the world's population, someone once said it's going to be under 15 almost. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's right. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be awful. The increase is tremendous.
When you get that many people, think how many more people you're going to have, because they'll all be of childbearing age.
Yeah.
And they'll...
That's right. As you can see, the picture here in the developing world, where already they have economic problems, is anywhere near as bright and as hopeful as in the north. In Africa, Latin America, the Middle East, and even Eastern Europe, to some degree, have all reduced their birth rates, but they've been offset by even larger declines in death rates. Bangladesh, you know where Bangladesh is over there in India? The size of Wisconsin, 104 million people. It's estimated by the year 2000, it'll have 144,000 people. Kenya, 144 million.
Yeah.
Kenya, near 4%, is producing 400,000 high school graduates a year. 20,000 new jobs. What happens to the 380,000 high school graduates that have no place to go? Well, I'll tell you what happens to those. They go onto the street corners. I remember when I grew up in Chicago, there were people called drugstore cowboys. Do you remember those? And those are the guys that used to hang around the drugstore.
But now these people are moving to the cities and causing all kinds of problems. Not only are they moving to the city where there isn't any housing for them, and therefore they live in slum conditions the likes of which you cannot imagine. No water, no sewage, no education, no medical. The stench is, well, some of you that are farmers maybe experienced it when you walked out to the pig section of your farm and then multiply that by a couple of humans. And there they live. And the governments try to suppress those people by reducing the price of food. Suppress them, I should say, keep them happy by reducing the price of food, which makes farmers lose income. And then the farmer says, this is ridiculous. I'm going to go to the city too. Why should I grow food that I'm not being paid for? And some of you farmers have experienced that. Let's take a look at Brazil. It's just 400,000 square miles smaller than the United States. And its population in 86 was about 140 or 150 million people. The rate of growth is around 3%. It doubles in about 28 years. What's going to happen in Brazil? whose population is estimated to be around 200 million by the year 2000. Lester Brown states, and I want to quote, that the countries of the North, including China, have, quote, fertility which is at or below replacement levels, and have established a balance between births and deaths, or in the process of doing so. The other half of the world, where birth rates remain high, life support systems are being overwhelmed by birth rates, ecological deterioration is taking place, and a declining living standard is occurring. He goes on to say that unless this changes, the countries that are experiencing high birth rates, low death rates, are going to have economic problems beyond our imagination. And then you start having disease that becomes rampant because you no longer are able to provide medical attention, and famines, and all kinds of disease become rampant.
You told me something that I never thought of before, that what really hurts these developing countries in large part too is that we in America have built our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our universities, hospitals, all that type of thing, back in the days when things were cheap comparatively and stuff available. And now, if they have to build all that stuff when they're starving already, they'll never get it made. That really struck me. Mm-hmm. That's a really kind of a horror
problem. Plus, they have to pay back debts.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, thank you for that. And you start talking, as we did last week, about international debt problems, where Sudan, for example, where we have an office, LWR has an office, is to pay back the interest on their debt is 120% of their foreign exchange earnings. They can't do it, you see. And you're absolutely right. And that, you see, gets into this cycle, and you begin getting down further and further and further. And rather than escaping the population trap, people get deeper and deeper into this problem.
You mentioned a couple times already where the projection did not turn out to be accurate of certain countries. It seems like in some circles the population problem is being de-emphasized now on a global basis because of pushing some of the projections. How how accurate do you see these projections as being?
That's a good question. And that's one thing you can put on a projection here. Here's one, and yes, you're right, because as disease increases, and hopefully as education increases, people will say, hey, enough, and they will stop having children. We're living in a rather unusual time, according to some projection. This comes out of the UN data. You can see that they expect population to peak in about the year 2025. And then a decline happens. And one of the reasons, this is annual incremental world population, one of the reasons, of course, is because you're going to have declining food, death rates are going to increase, unless we begin leveling off. In Germany, in Western Europe, here in the United States, people say, I can't afford more than two children. I got to send them to college and all that kind of stuff. Can't afford to raise them, can't afford to feed them. And so people, I come from a family of 11 children. My mother had 11 children. You have to go look a long way to find a family with 11 children today. And times have changed. And someone brought out back here the fact that one reason, of course, that there's a high birth rate in the developing world is because there is no such thing as Social Security. All of us can expect our children to live through maturity. But if you're in India or in Africa, you're going to find that probably half of your children are going to be die before you reach your old age. And there is no Social Security.
The fact is, though, that we also need our children for Social Security.
Do we?
Because if there aren't enough children, who's going to pay the Social Security?
That's true. That's
well,
very
that
true.
Is
that's one of the things that you young people have got to look forward to, supporting old codgers like me, you see. We go through. But that's right. But there at least we have a safety net.
Right, I realize that.
And they have nothing. Huh? They have nothing.
But still here we are really more or less, I would say, controlling our population, but the rest of the world is not, and so what's going to happen to the northern continent? I mean, are they going to be eliminated eventually by their own population control?
Yeah. Let me come back to that while Mara says something.
Hmm? I was going to say that in our family, three children died in infancy. So only eight of us grew to adulthood.
That's true.
That's all changed because those three deaths are now preventable by inoculation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the whole matter of education in the developing world, I'd like you to mention sometime, and maybe we'll do that on Friday, what is LWR and LWF doing about educating women? If you go into a country and educate men, that does not solve the problem because there's a direct correlation between the education of women and food production and lower birth rate.
Well, sure.
Because the women in Africa do 80% of the food raising, the food crop raising, and yet when aid programs go in, they often educate men in how to use tractors, et cetera, et cetera, which doesn't help at all, as far as people.
Yeah.
And also,
well, we'll talk about that when we talk about women tomorrow in development.
And also, you know, we got the same problem right here in the States. You talked about where these people are living, like in Africa, which I'm familiar with, where they go to town because they can't make it on the farm anymore. They go into these ghettos and they turn to crime.
Yeah.
What do we got right here in the States? In Chicago, New York, and any other real large city, the ghettos, they can't get out of them. It's just nothing but crime.
Yeah.
they don't have jobs either.
That's right.
Like Detroit.
There you go.
Got a lot of people, young people without jobs.
That's right. We got a big problem right here.
Well, that's true. I was just trying to find, to respond to a question over here. Trying to find, and I can't, in my, I have a world population data sheet here. Of course, many countries don't feel they have a population problem. Well, I can maybe, you know, Botswana, for example, is one. Botswana has got a population of 1.1 million. 1 million. And yet it's one of the largest countries in Africa. I mean, they've got one person every 20 kilometers, probably. They say, hey, what are you talking about, population? We don't have any population. Niger in West Africa, the 18th largest country in the world, has a population of 6.5 million people. They, you know, it's the size of California, Oregon, and Washington put together. 6.5 million people. I say, hey, we haven't got any population problem. What are you talking about? And that's difficult to counteract. I saw our hand up.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, they do need to do a lot of work with their population, but we also need to control our consumption.
Exactly.
And our exploitation of those countries, which takes away the land use of the, so that the people can't grow their own food. It all goes to our oranges and coffee and chocolate and bananas and things like that. It's for us, it's not for them.
Well, that's true. And I would only counter that by saying that, you know, this is a state policy, a country policy, that we're going to have cash cropping. It isn't the poor fellow in the field. He's not doing that. And we as PVOs have got to be concerned about that. LWR was asked to participate in Uganda.
Private voluntary organization.
In Germany and the rest of the world, it's known as NGOs, non-government organizations. We're PVOs. LWR is a PVO. We were asked to participate in a $3.5 million project in north west Uganda. We turned it down. We refused to help. Because the purpose of the project was to grow tobacco and to grow cotton, which they would then export. And we said, hey, we don't want anything to do with that. And so we turned our back on it. We said, rather, if you want to get small farmers onto the same parcel of land, we will help them with tools and seed and such irrigation as may be necessary for their own subsistence. But we are not about to do any cash cropping.
John, what do you think, just Africa doesn't do nearly the amount of cash cropping as, let's say, the Central and South America. Is their problem more the drought that they've been experiencing there? And I also think maybe, I think there have always been droughts in Africa throughout the history. I think they were nomadic. Were they more or less nomadic peoples before colonization? And now that they've been forced to live in, you know, our type of a population where you're in a border, and so they can't, you know what I mean? They can't escape to the place where the drought isn't.
Yeah. Well, there is still a lot of movement across borders.
Oh, there is.
People, the Tuaregs, for example, in Western Africa, are still crossing borders pretty much. If you've read recently, in Senegal and Mauritania, there are thousands and thousands, 100,000 people who are from Mauritanians who have moved down into Senegal and vice versa. So there's that. You raised a point earlier about Africa not being a cash cropping area. Well, it is.
It is.
It grows peanuts, you know, by the ground nuts, as it's called. The coffee in Ethiopia, huh? In fact, our word coffee comes from a province in Ethiopia. That's the province of Tafe. Huh? from Ethiopia. Cotton by the tons, Sudan grows all kinds of cotton. And Sudanese cotton is long fiber, I guess, and it's good for something or other, I don't know. But yeah, there's a lot of it, unfortunately. And this lady up here mentioned, Sarah, I guess it is, mentioned the debt. And they've got to grow, they feel, something to export, huh? In order to pay off their debt. So there is, maybe not as much as in Central America. Central America is closer to us, and we're a little more aware of bananas and other fruit that they may grow. But no, Africa is just, I won't say it's bad, I haven't got those figures, but it's certainly not uncommon. Yes, sir.
You, a minute ago, you were mentioning the question of governmental policies being part of the problem in each individual country. I was reading an essay a little while ago which advocated that the U.S. Abandoned foreign aid entirely just because foreign aid goes to other governments, and sometimes it lets government leaders off the hook for their own mistakes, or in any case, it doesn't really address the problems of the various countries involved.
That's true, unfortunately. There are political considerations, you see, that overwhelm maybe the economic aspects, or the fact that such as Marcos, you know, skimmed off millions, if not billions of dollars from the aid we provided him. That's happening today in Zaire, I would suggest to you, with Mr. Bamutu Mabutu. And he's, you know, as I said earlier, he's got 11 palaces in Zaire with four-lane highways going out to the palace, and private air jets, airports right there by the palace, and billions in Swiss banks. And yet, he's important to us politically in Central Africa, and so we put up with a lot of that.
And still, Norm, we still haven't did what we should have done with this money back to the Philippine people. It's still tied up in the courts, and it's been there, and it will be there for probably another 10 years.
Yes.
And these people are living in garbage over there, if you,
they sure
if
are.
You've seen it,
yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. Yes, you have a mountain of smoke, is that what it's called?
Yep.
For the garbage heaps.
For the garbage. But then I read an article now when they started shooting down the Chinese that they don't want a change in their government, because there's too many people at the top that have their own private hospitals, private grocery stores, all these things that they're trying to protect because they don't want to live like the other people, so consequently they don't want change.
Let me read a quote from Foreign Policy by Jorge Castellano. He's a Mexican. It's called Mexico's Coming Challenge. Mexico has three challenges. This isn't the quote. Mexicans have three challenges before them, and the greatest of them is population. How do they overcome these things? They either attempt to migrate to the U.S., spend their idle time on the streets, or rise up in revolution. Castellano says that the only way to offset the adverse social effects of the poor is redistribution of the country's wealth. But when the wealthiest 10% of Mexicans receive 41% of the income, and the poorest one-fifth, less than 3%, there is little change, likelihood of change of redistribution taking place peacefully. And if you go to Egypt, a country where we have already looked at the distribution of U.S. foreign aid the other night, here is a country that the U.S. is deeply involved with, particularly since the Camp David Accord. Its strategic location in the Middle East, its utter dependence upon the Nile River, and its relations with Israel, the Arab world, and its former relations with the Soviet Union all demand a lot of tender, loving care. Add to all the above, which is trouble enough, a population rate growth rate of 2.6%, an economy that's all but on its knees, and has all the ingredients for political unrest of enormous proportions. 50 million people make it the largest Arab country.
And my friends, if we stop providing Egypt with assistance, the Middle East will really erupt into some kind of problem. Certainly Egypt will. And where Egypt goes, does it become a fundamentalist Muslim country like Iran? Does it go back into the Soviet orbit? What happens, huh? Egypt's population increases are taking more and more land out of production. And its crop yields, although very high, are dependent upon the Nile River, as I mentioned the other night.
So maybe we Lutherans are working on the wrong end of the scale, trying to bring religion to the lowly people. Maybe we ought to try to bring a little religion to the people up there that are taking all the money.
Well, one thing we have done, and LWR has done this in the country of Niger, and if you, I think it's going to be shown today, it maybe isn't. Surely, flying quotes are going to be shown today.
Yeah.
Tomorrow you will see, be able to see at 12:30 here, film called When the Harvest Comes. We went into Niger as a very small PBO, encouraged well drilling. This happened in 74. In 1984, the government confiscated all of our well drilling equipment and all of our techniques. Why? Because we weren't doing enough. They wanted more. This was in the period of the drought. They made it the national policy that what we call contre saison, dry season farming, would become the policy of the country. And that's one thing that we PVO should try and do. And that is to convince governments overseas and have them see that it's to their advantage to follow some simple idea like well drilling. It's not enough to just go out and drill wells and or dig them. You've got to have a change in the policy of the government. And we Lutherans should be not only encouraging our own government to require such changes on the part of recipients of foreign aid, but we should be trying to do what we can to bring this about in other countries besides the United States. You had your hand up.
No, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. So that we need to redistribute land. We need to reduce population growth. It's clear to me that unless some of these changes are made in the developing world with respect to population policies, these countries cannot expect economic growth. Left alone, they're going to have very great difficulty in lifting themselves out of their problems. Well, do you have any questions? We've just very roughly, and any of you who might be interested, there's a map, a world population data sheet here that might show you how what's happening in some of the worlds. I have other things we could show, but I think this is probably, as my brother-in-law said the other night, I feel like I'm a mummy because I'm pressed for time.
What general success? What general success has there been in population control by our government and some of the things they've done in the past?
Yeah, that's a good question, huh? One of the things we're trying to do as a PBO, of course our government is very much opposed to any kind of population control. One of the things we're trying to do is educate women, because there's a real relationship between the level of a woman's education and the number of children she will have. So we do that. We try to teach in Kenya particularly, also in Swaziland and Zimbabwe, breastfeeding, also child spacing. To a child that's breastfed is going to have a better chance of surviving, and the mother won't have another child while she's breastfeeding the first. So we try to do that. And so those are the three things we're trying to do. educate stress breastfeeding and stress child spacing. So we do that wherever we're asked to do it, and in those three East African countries, one where we're actively, Bangladesh is another.
You know, Norm, when my kids are in Tanzania, you know, my son-in-law got really sick. So my daughter took him to a hospital, the closest one, I don't know if it was Moshi or where it was outside of Tanzania, or outside of Arusha. And when she got there, they was going to do some blood tests on him, and they kept saying, clean. They had a pan on needles, and there was dried blood all over them, and they were just going to take one of them out and take his blood test, you know. What she made him, she made the guy blood for 20 or 30 minutes to do it. And then in the hospital part of this, there was three people in the bed. A woman having a baby, possibly somebody with a gangrene in their leg. And
yeah.
See, this is kind of a deal, isn't it?
That's true. Well, I told you my wife was going to talk to me. I'm not sure.
Is doing reforestation?
Yes. Reforestation indeed, in lots of places. Almost everywhere we
are there species or varieties of trees that are being found that can quickly grow in some of those, like Ethiopian regions that have been so severely deforested?
Well, one of the big trees in Africa is eucalyptus. I'm not a forester, we have a forester on the staff, so he does that, but we are here in that place. Listen, we better stop. Thanks for coming. At 12:30.